Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, it doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Hello, everybody out there, and welcome to a special bonus free preview of the first episode of our Blab About Batman, the Animated Series podcast miniseries. Hello, everybody. I am Bob Mackey. I am always surprised by the amount of nicknames you can give someone named Charlie, who's here with me today.
And hey, it's me, Henry, and I could go for some meatloaf right about now.
And that's right. If you are not a patron, you do not know what you're missing out on, pal, because we are currently unraveling a new podcast miniseries behind the $5 paywall at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. I set it up front, but once again, it is Blab About Batman, the Animated Series. Within that miniseries, we are talking about our 10 favorite episodes of Batman, the Animated Series, using the patented Talking Simpsons style with clips and research and everything you've come to love about our podcast.
And it's just our most recent miniseries out of so many others. We have over 100 episodes of previous Patreon-exclusive miniseries covering shows like King of the Hill, Futurama, Mission Hill, and The Critic. And now our newest one is going to be coming your way every Friday at Patreon.com/Talking Simpsons.
That's right. If you sign up today at Patreon.com/Talking Simpsons, you'll get to hear the rest of this episode and also a new episode every Friday throughout the rest of 2021. That is 10 episodes in total, along with our extensive back catalog of podcast miniseries we've been producing over the past 4.5 years. That is a lot to listen to if you are currently not a patron.
Yeah, in fact, you get it when you sign up this month. You'll also get the Talking Futurama brand new in the middle of the month as well. So that's already an extra bonus you're getting if you sign up at that $5 level at patreon.com/Talking Simpsons.
So thank you so much for listening to this brief preamble. We'll let you get to this free preview of our Blab About Batman, the Animated Series episode, all about the episode Joker's Favor. Enjoy. Everybody, and welcome to Blabbing About Batman, the Animated Series, the number one podcast among crooks, weirdos, and geeks. I'm one of your hosts, the Wheatloaf Enjoyer, Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Network's exploration of Batman, the Animated Series, who is here with me today.
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and it is to laugh, eh, Mr. B?
And today's episode is Joker's Favor.
Oh, very funny. A million laughs.
This week's episode aired on 9/11, 1992. We have 9 years. We're safe. And as always, Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
The latest reports say that the wave of foolish hysteria is moving down 7th Avenue towards the financial district.
Holy news, Bobby! Frank Zappa plays his final concert. Blade Runner's director's cut is released in theaters, and Dr. Mae Jemison becomes the first African-American woman to travel into space.
Wow. Lots of big news. Again, this is a safe 9/11.
Yes.
We have 9 years before the Joker's ultimate trick.
Oh, God. It was him. Joker all along.
That's my conspiracy theory. Blade Runner was actually re-released in the theaters in 1992.
So the director's cut got its VHS release, but related to that, it had a small, you know, like art house play of the director's cut. And I think this is the first of many, 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 many director's cuts of it. I believe it was 25th anniversary, so that would be 2007 is when I saw a final cut of Blade Runner in theaters when I was still new to the Bay Area.
And the other news was Frank Zappa playing his last concert. Now, I only heard about Frank Zappa through his death, because both Matt Groening and I think like the people who made Duckman were fans of Frank Zappa. Obviously, his son was on Duckman. So yeah. Two shows I liked had Frank Zappa in memorial cards.
I mean, like, Groening was more than a fan. He was a friend.
That's true.
He brags all the time about, like, oh, I went Frank Zappa to this or that.
Maybe even MST3K had one, too.
I think so. Yeah. I think to that generation of Gen X dudes, he was, everybody loved him. They thought he was a fun guy who was like very artsy and self-important.
Made me think I should get into Frank Zappa, and I listened to a few songs and I said, this is not for my generation.
But he did know it would probably be his final concert. He would pass away from cancer a year later. Mm-hmm. But it was in Germany, and apparently, at least according to the Wikipedia, he got a 20-minute standing ovation.
He went out on top.
Yeah, and I guess I wonder if before or after that is when he recorded his part as the Pope in that Powder Toast Man episode.
Save me. Yeah. Is that what he sounded like?
I think so.
And what's this astronaut news that we have?
It's just, you know, back when we sent people into space all the time on the Columbia.
And the government paid for it.
And the government paid for it. Oh, yes.
I mean, in a way, we are paying for Amazon and other people to go to space.
Yeah, except now it's like not even really space. Like, Dr. Mae Jemison should be like, no, I went to fucking real space 20-something years before you did.
That was not that Bush League suborbital crap.
Yeah. Also, like, I even looked into this, like, in the aughts, you know, dudes went into space to the Russian space station all the time, but that, of course, the American media doesn't count that as, like, oh, the first rich guy in space. Like, rich guys were paying to go into space to the Russian space station tons of times.
They made fun of Mir. They're like, that crap in space.
I know.
I bet it's stupid and wrong.
All these Xer and Boomer news guys, they can't let go of the space race stuff. It has to act like America's still number one in it when we're number one in a lot of things, mostly bad.
So that is what happened in history on 9/11 of 1992. Yes. We're down to our last 9/11s we can celebrate.
Yeah.
It's not a dark day in history yet, but it's a bright day in history today because we are kicking off our Blabbing About BTS animated series. Sorry, it's a podcast series. We're just going to be very animated on it.
Yes.
This is our fall 2021 miniseries, and it won the poll. Mm-hmm. So thank you all for voting for it.
Sorry, Duckman. Yes. Better luck next time.
He'll get his day one day.
Batman beats Duckman, as always, in the Battle of the Detectives.
It's true.
And we've covered Batman the Animated Series quite extensively already in our podcast careers, so it totally makes sense that this would win. You know, our very first What a Cartoon podcast, Batman Heart of Ice.
Yeah, and it was our first What a Cartoon movie as well.
Yeah, The Mask of the Phantasm. Yes. Yeah.
And I will say, because of that, I will not be covering the origin of the series on this podcast. If you want to hear all about it, check out the Heart of Ice and Almost Got Him podcast on the What a Cartoon feed.
There's a whole bunch of behind-the-scenes info on that one.
And yes, we'll be covering 10 episodes in total up until the end of 2021. And these are chosen by Henry and myself. We each chose 5. There was no other scientific process. We just each went with our guts, and there was only one overlap in our own choices. And this was it, right?
Yeah. This was the one. I mean, it's like, what? There are so many great jokery ones in here. You know, like, we, for example, I almost picked Laughing Fish, but this is a better version of that. And also, Laughing Fish is... it's one that's like so taken off the page from a comic that I feel this is cooler because it doesn't take as much inspiration from a comic page. I think the only one of the ones we picked that is super off of an old comic book page is The Demon's Quest, but that's because, like, the Ra's al Ghul, I felt like we had to do the Ra's al Ghul one. But yeah, the interesting thing is that our 10 episodes cover the gamut of the seasons very well. We do 5 from the first huge chunk of episodes, 3 from the second chunk of episodes, and 2 from the smallest chunk of episodes.
We're covering all 3 eras of the show, and it is fitting we're starting with this one because it is the TV audience's introduction to the Joker. This is the first one that aired starring the Joker. Production order does not matter with this series at all, by the way.
No. I mean, yeah, in production order, well, it's like this same thing happened with Tiny Toons the year before from the same production company, where their first stuff in order, a lot of it, like, looked crappy because it's the first ones that make it looks worse. Like, for example, the first Joker episode in production order is Christmas with the Joker, which is a fine written episode, but Kennedy Toons, and it was just not on the same page as Batman, the animated series.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of striking when you rent the DVDs, I think it goes like On Leather Wings and then Christmas with the Joker.
Yes,
Like two episodes on very different ends of the Batman animated series spectrum.
And even though this is the opposite of how we do with Futurama, I prefer we're doing the air order on this one for sure.
Yeah, there was never an intended order. It was like, okay, what is coming in from Korea or Japan? What can we air?
What's done now out of this 65 episode order? Because, you know, sometimes with these 65 episode orders, it's all done right at the start. But a lot of the time it's like, well, we've got 20 right now. And in 6 months or 3 months from now, we'll finally have the rest of them done. Yeah.
So as we do with these miniseries, we do writer's corners and director's corners for all the new people we run upon or run across in this podcast. And we have talked about him before, but our writer for this episode is Paul Dini, who is synonymous with Batman at this point in history, 30 years later.
And it was funny, I looked up some old interviews with him, and he's made it clear, like, growing up, he loved all these, like, adventures and mystery stories, but he actually thought Batman was a little scary for him as a kid. So he wasn't a huge Batman guy growing up. But yeah, I did a little bit history on him recently too. If you guys want to hear me talk about Paul Dini related to his He-Man work, you should listen to my appearance on the Gayest Episode Ever podcast, where we covered one of his episodes. He wrote what I would say is the gayest episode of He-Man they ever did. But yeah, Paul Dini, he was one of those guys who's like worked on a million 80s cartoon shows that it's crazy to think he went on to any prestige, because it was such just a factory back then. And his earliest work was starting at Filmation as an intern. Some of his first scripts was on junk like Gilligan's Planet. And then he moved over to Lucasfilm in the early 80s or mid 80s to help with the development of droids and Ewoks. And he said he really liked working with Lucas. And you would think that, like, Lucas set up shop in L.A. But as he told it, he's like, no, that was, we went to Lucasfilm in up in Marin County in Northern California. And he's lived there for a time helping develop the series. And also in the 80s, he wrote, like I said, He-Man, Transformers, G.I. Joe, Smurfs, all the things you did in the 80s as a workaday TV cartoon writer. And yeah, he said the first time he worked with Bruce Timm was at a real crossroads for a million people who would matter a whole lot in 90s animation, the 1988 Beanie and Cecil reboot series.
Right. So many things spun out of that, like Ren and Stimpy, The Simpsons, and Tiny Toons.
Yep. Yeah.
From all those creatives.
And Bruce Timm was one of the five directors on the series, and Dini worked with him on that series. And so Timm and Dini, like a big chunk of the Beanie and Cecil folks, moved over to Tiny Toons and under the new Warner Television umbrella. And that's where he worked a lot with Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski, including on the Bat Duck episodes of Tiny Toons, which showed they all loved Batman.
Yeah, that's a crazy thing to me that shows just the amount of chances these people were given based on their success, is that they just gave Tiny Toons people the right to make Batman. I mean, their pitch for it was amazing.
Yes.
But they didn't say, let's get a Batman guy in here who knows about Batman. They're like, no, we trust you. Even though you make a funny cartoon about like pastel colored bunnies, you can also make Batman.
It's really crazy to think about, because they're doing a new set of Batman cartoons soon in the style. And Tim's working on it, but it's still partnered with, you know, J.J. Abrams and his Bad Robot Company, which I'm like, they don't fucking need this. And also, Bruce Timm, when he was like 30, co-created Batman the Animated Series with Radomski, and Dini was in his early 30s too. But now it's like, no, we can't trust this to cartoon boy. He's got to have J.J. Abrams babysit.
He's a visionary, even though he made one of the worst movies on public record.
Yeah,
in the past decade.
He kind of killed Star Wars, like, or they had to just make it a TV series and pretend then Abrams movies didn't happen.
I will stop complaining about this, but I feel like we're being gaslit about that last movie, where it's like, you still like Star Wars. You still like it, remember? That last movie never happened. Don't be mad.
Yeah, you pretty much just have to go, just think about The Mandalorian, okay? Don't think about...
He's pretty cool. Yeah. He's got a helmet.
Luke Skywalker shows up at the end of that. Isn't that great? Like, it's totally fine now. Anyway, you know, G. McCurdy, orders it. Timm and Radomski pitch it. And they need 65 episodes in 18 months. And that's what Dini says, why he was like, how... in an old interview, he was asked how did it happen, and he's like, well, the short version is they needed 65 episodes in 18 months, and so Deeney was one of the story editors for a batch and wrote a shitload of episodes. I'd say he was second only to Alan Burnett as the most important writer in the room, and he showed what his skill was in the series, which was finding new ways of writing classic villains. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
And so much is happening at WB at the time. This is the silver age of WB. There are so many things in productions. Tiny Toons is ending its Fox run. It's ending its run, period. There'll be a few more things after that. Tasmania is happening. Animaniacs is in development. Things are being made. And Batman is starting.
Yeah, it's a crazy time there. Like, that is them ramping up, like... Honestly, it sounds like they're doing more in a year than when Disney was doing with their TV stuff. Like, they'd already overtaken it production-wise. I always forget in the, like, Tiny Toons and Animaniacs world, the Tasmania just sits there in the middle of it. No, we're, like, as a full production series as well.
Yeah, like 65 episodes. There's a ton of it.
I mean, it's still a little smaller scale than Tiny Toons, and you can tell it's a little smaller budget, but not by that much.
Still a full orchestra, you know, scoring every episode.
Deeney shows that his real skill is with the baddies. Like, Batman had this amazing rogues gallery beforehand anyway, but Paul Deeney found, like, you know, this one simple trick. It bedevils every Hollywood writer. But he made the villains interesting and them have, like, a tragic backstory. Made them cool.
And he wrote Heart of Ice, right?
Yeah.
The first one we covered.
Heart of Ice is the real template for it. And the Joker's not a guy who needed fixing in that way. But I do think about what he gave to the Joker. Lots of people write the Joker in lots of ways. Like, Frank Miller's Joker is kind of a drag queen in love with Batman. Mm. Like, Grant Morrison's Joker he's like a punk rock Sid Vicious type who's just crazy. And as he told it at this San Diego Comic Con panel I saw in 2008, Paul Deeney was asked what makes his Joker the Joker. And he's like, he is the world's greatest bully. Like, he's the comedian, the mean comedian who gets up on stage, sees the person who wants to be mentioned the least in the audience, and focuses on them.
Which is the protagonist
them.
Of this story that we're going to talk about.
It fits this episode perfectly.
And like, I feel like it needs to be mentioned because we're older people. We're getting older. We're almost 40.
Oh, no.
In that this episode, obviously the series as a whole starts in 92. The Joker is about like 7 or 9 episodes in. The Joker is old news.
Mm-hmm.
New news is Penguin and Catwoman. The Joker was 1989. Who cares? Now it's always like, where's the Joker? Who's playing the Joker? When's the next Joker movie? And the same thing with Harley Quinn.
Yep.
But in this point in history, the Joker was not as cool as he is now as popular.
You know, when people think about the Adam West series, like, Joker, we all think of Joker as number one, but Riddler was the number one villain on that show. Everybody thought the Riddler was the coolest and Joker was secondary, but now it's I mean Joker has been number one for a long time since I think Mark Hamill really made it truly the number one spot
for sure. And Riddler gets so few episodes on this series. It's a real inversion of 66 Batman.
Well, you know, if you're watching 66 Batman, Riddler and Joker have so much in common anyway. Like, if Joker overtakes the series, like, if you can't find a specific thing that makes it a Riddler story, then you should just go, like, well, if it's like a guy, like, with elaborate plans that are overly dramatic and tricks Batman, just make it Joker. Why are you wasting time on the Riddler?
I think Frank Gorshin vamped as much as Mark Hamill does in the Joker role.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Any more Paul Deeney facts? I mean, we talked a lot about him on this network. I think he even wrote, like, the Freakazoid episode we did.
Yeah, so this the Batman show is an interesting transition for him, so... Tiny Toons wins Emmys, and he gets his first Emmy on Tiny Toons. Batman wins Emmys, and Batman becomes so big that he pretty much stops being a workaday guy for everything. And he's like, no, I'm just in this DC world. I'll work on Batman. Once Superman starts up at Kids WB, I'm working on Superman and Batman at the same time. When it's time for Batman Beyond, he helps redefine that too. And then after the Return of the Joker, I think it really is, he kind of leaves the DCAU. Like, he doesn't work with Bruce Timm as much as he did before and the rest of that group as he did before. Like, he'll write an episode here and there of, like, the Justice League show, but he kind of does his own thing. Like, he works on either personal projects, like his original comic co-creation Jingle Bell, which if you look her up, it's like, well, that's just Christmas Harley Quinn. But he also was like
Christmas Harley Quinn Goes to Summer Camp.
But he also like was a showrunner of the Duck Dodgers series in 04. Plus he was working on a ton of superhero films that got lost in development hell. Like, he was working on a Batman Beyond live action thing until Batman Begins came out, and they decided like, nah, that's what we're doing with Batman.
You know, one thing that really annoyed me about doing research about this show is that Tim Burton was always very dismissive of this show.
Oh, really?
And I think he was mad that they used the theme for Batman Returns for the show.
That's bullshit.
But it was really all about Danny Elfman wanting to get TV royalties. So he conspired to have his theme be the theme to the TV show to get money for every time it aired. It was a Danny Elfman plot.
That was really smart of the Elfman. And maybe too, that was Elfman getting back at him for taking away his voice acting as Jack Skellington.
Yeah, I guess they were on the rocks at that point, right?
yeah, maybe, you know, or else maybe he did this first with the soundtrack, and then Burton's like, you know what? I don't think you should be Jack Skellington's voice anymore. Mm-hmm. You're just going to sing it.
This is what caused the fight. But yeah, Tim Burton, kind of a jerk about this show.
Yeah, that's bullshit. I mean, that shows you, like, he was maybe seeing, like, he lost the spirit of Batman. Like, these guys understood Batman more than him. But, then in 09... he kind of left DC entirely, and he was working on, like, he actually worked on some Marvel cartoons like Spider-Man and the Hulk, but his vision of Batman the Animated Series would persist under him on the Arkham games. Like, he's
right.
a writer on Arkham Asylum, also has story credit on Arkham City, and not visually, but if you play those games, they are very much this world with a lot of the same actors.
And I pointed out before, but he plays Dr. Gene Splicer on Tiny Toon Adventures.
Yes.
It's a caricature of him. I don't know if he does the voice, but because of that, because there are so few villains in that world, that guy's in every one of those old video games. So you can fight Paul Dini in the old Tiny Toons games.
And he's also, I mean, clearly fanboy in Freakazoid is drawn to look like him too. Since then, he's in the last few years, he's lost a bunch of weight. He is, you know, happily married to a magician that he can live out his Zatanna fantasy in real life. And yeah, unfortunately though, he hasn't written a lot. I think I've never seen this publicly, but it definitely seems like him and Bruce Timm don't work together anymore. Like, they work together a lot and they don't anymore, and I can't say why, but like, there's been all these Harley Quinn things. He didn't work on none of them. He has created by credit. Like, if you go to IMDb, you're like, oh, look, he's got credit on all these Harley Quinn things that have happened in the last 5 years. It's just the created by credit. He's not a writer on any of them.
I wonder what's up with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I think he and Tim have different views as to the direction things should be going with Batman.
Sure, yeah. I think, I think Dini, you know, but the synthesis between them is so good. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I think they're both horny in different ways for the Batman universe.
We need two different kinds of hornies. One horny for magicians, one horny for double butts.
The infamous double butt.
Yes.
Last thing I'll say about Dini and his time there, I've said it before, but people really should read it. If you want to see a story about his time working on the show back in 92 or 93, Paul Dini's autobiographical comic The Dark Knight, art by Edward Rizzo, is about a traumatic event that happened to Paul Dini while working on this show. And it's very interesting. If you'd like to see a book, a very honest and raw kind of story from Paul Dini set during the time of working on this series.
So I want to talk about the director of this episode. He is not held in the same esteem as Bruce Timm or like Eric Radomski, but he is a major part of this show. His name is Boyd Kirkland.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, he did pass away a decade ago at the age of 60, but he was a major influence on the show. He directed 24 episodes of the show in the Fox era. He was a sequence director on Mask of the Phantasm, and he was the director and co-writer of the Sub-Zero movie, which is very, very good.
Oh, yeah, man. The Sub-Zero movie. Movie rules. Like, he is definitely one of the top directors the animated series had.
So how he got the job is very easy to explain, kind of boring. He saw Tiny Toons, was like, oh my god, Warner, I want to be there, especially if they're going to be working on this Batman series I heard about. So he went there and got hired because he has a very long history in animation.
his bona fides were hard to turn him down, then, I guess.
Yeah, he did work on a bunch of crap, though, as most people did before the 90s. So,
well, yeah, I don't blame anybody for having... I said with Dini as well, it's like, if you worked in the 80s, you worked on crap. That's all you had access to.
Which is why he started in 1977 as a layout artist on Scooby's Laugh Olympics. I think one of the better shows.
Yeah, I mean, of the Hanna-Barbera output in 77, probably, I think so. At least it was the Avengers Endgame of Hanna-Barbera.
It was the Jellystone of its time.
Yeah.
So yes, he worked at Hanna-Barbera up through the early 80s. He started jumping around studios. He was like a layout artist on a ton of different superhero and superhero adjacent stuff like Thundar the Barbarian, the 81-82 Spider-Man series, the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends series that we covered, the Incredible Hulk and G.I. Joe, and also did a lot of Mormon and Bible animation right before this show.
Oh, well,
so
all right.
He could be a Mormon. I couldn't find any info on that.
I mean, or, you know, you just take, just like Art Clokey, the Christian money pays the bills.
Mm-hmm. And this is his first role as director is on this series.
Really?
Yes. And after this, he would go on to be a writer, director, and producer on X-Men Evolution, another previous What a Cartoon.
Ah, yes.
Apparently, he was the writer and creator of the year 2000 Lobo web series.
Whoa.
Which I have never seen or heard about, but apparently it exists.
I should check that. I'm a fan of the main man. I should check that out.
I really don't want to
sure
go
it
back.
Looks bad.
Yeah.
Sure it looks
after we
bad.
Watch those critic web episodes yes. from the same era, I never want to go back.
I would think at least Boyd Kirkland can at least get like strong posing in there to make it look like a good slideshow even if the like budget's shit on it.
And his last role was a director on The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, another What a Cartoon.
Yeah.
He passed away in 2011. All of his episodes aired in 2012, so posthumously his episodes all aired.
Very sad, but that's why that show like looks so much. The best Marvel cartoons were when they just said, let's just hire the Batman people. Like we're getting our ass beat by Batman. Let's just hire whatever guys are available from Batman.
And one sad credit that he has, he is the director of Happily Never After 2.
Oh.
The direct-to-video sequel for Happily Never After, a Shrek ripoff.
Man, the first one was bad enough. Boy.
When you read about this one, it's like Andy Dick did not return to voice that character again. You're like, if you can't get Andy Dick back.
Andy Dick's like, nah, no, thank you. I'm good. I'm too good for this. Yeah.
I found my money for illicit things elsewhere this month.
You know, you got to take the pay where it comes in that animation mm-hmm. world, you know? It sucks.
And overseas animation on this one is by Dong Yang, responsible for some of the better looking episodes. They did a lot of the work on this show. I would say almost most of the episodes are animated by them.
I would call Dong Yang the the workmanlike studio who there were all the TMS and TMS adjacent studios like Spectrum or whatever that did some of the best stuff. But Dong Yang, you could count on for like, this is early in their time, but you could count on them for just quality stuff. And that's why like they were they did every episode of Batman Beyond, I think.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Or half of them with one other studio.
They did most of the second Fox season of the show, which is 20 episodes. And then for a lot of their work, Spectrum actually did layout for Dong Yang.
Oh, okay.
We're going to be talking a lot about these overseas studios, but my ranking for Korean animation studios from this show is Coco's number one, Dong Yang number two, Acom number three. Acom would be fired from this show. They didn't like Acom's episodes.
I think Coco's the one that's TMS associated. Mm-hmm. I think
and for Japan I go TMS, Spectrum, and something else.
And then right all the way to the bottom, Kennedy too.
Yes. We won't talk about any of those though. We don't need to talk about the intro because we talked about it before in the past, but again, amazing intro.
Greatest thing.
It is a dressed up version of the pilot presentation they made. TMS animation. I love the painting of Batman you see at the end. It's all perfect. It's
pure perfection. Yes.
And an amazing title card. There are some very good title cards in this show. Some of them are not so good. This is one of the better ones where it just shows you everything about the episode in one image. The Joker's shadow looming over this picture of this family.
So good. Yeah. It does tell you everything you need to know about it. Like it's the one, you know, when Radomski left for the WB years, that really it hurt the show losing this stuff. Like it sets the tone. Like these are art unto themselves.
They don't want to pay someone to spend two days on a title card in the WB.
It's always about tightening the belts at WB. They're like, any way we can do this cheaper? Can TMS only do two episodes this year?
And you hear the Charlie Collins theme, which will be played with in many ways. we'll talk about it a lot. You'll hear it a lot, but the show is big on leitmotifs. Like every character has a theme, even new guys like this guy.
Yeah, it's back when they had the money for that. You know, it's not a Spielberg production, but it feels like it just, since the Spielberg ones were getting that, they were able to say, like, can Batman get that too? Can we get Shirley Walker and her associates just to do a full orchestration for every episode? And it's so great. I also like this. The story for this episode is such like a great Paul Dini thing of like him just with this great like kernel of a concept that grows out from there. And his, I'm sure, was born in a Los Angeles traffic jam. Yeah. Just going like, man, what if the guy that cut me off is a Joker? Well, and I gave him the finger.
I mean, we've been in those. I've driven in them. It sucks. So yeah. I've lived the Charlie Collins lifestyle. And what I love about this episode is that Fox just needs episodes, right? They're not really watching these guys too closely. This is a story about a middle-aged man who is sick of his lot in life. I'm watching this as a 10-year-old in 1992, and I'm into it.
It's like, it's a story of your dad being bullied by the Joker if you're a little kid watching it. And it's so, I can't believe I feel like they get watched more closely afterwards. They wouldn't get to do these kind of stories. Like Batman, not counting him driving by him at the start of this, like Batman appears in the third act. That's when you see Batman in this Batman cartoon.
And you can totally miss Batman driving by him in the beginning. I think I did on my last watch of this like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, wait, the Batmobile just goes right by him and you can blink and you miss it.
The theme music is just so good. This the Charlie Collins theme, and just he's this, you know, fat loser with balding, and he knows he's a loser. He's a loser who knows he's a loser.
Yeah, he's griping out loud to himself at the end of another awful day. It's just a laundry list of complaints, like the boss turned him down for a raise, his kid needs braces, and his wife is going to make meatloaf for dinner. Mm-hmm. And he's like, when did I become life's punching bag? Me, Charlie Collins.
Yeah, Collins, what a great just like schlub. Like it's like a schlub from like the 40s too. It would work the same. And it kind of reminds me of in Will Eisner's Spirit comics, he would do these like slice of life stories that would just start with some poor schlub who then runs into the spirit. I get a feel for that here.
Even though his license says 1991, we are not in the year 1991 in this show.
No. I all the black and white TVs. Yeah. These parties is such a 40s party. Yeah.
All the clothing. Batman has a computer because he's Batman. So Charlie Collins, played by Ed Begley Jr., because this series is great when it comes to casting character actors as the characters in the show. They don't really stick with voice actors that often, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty rare. That was very distracting to me watching, like, I flipped on the Creeper episode that's way at the end of the series, and that has, you know, a cartoon ass voice as Jeff Bennett.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, Jeff Bennett is a major role in this. That makes me think the Creeper, they actually were planning to do it as a series, because they're like, well, we could get Jeff Bennett for a million episodes of Creeper if it gets spun off.
He is available. But yeah. Ed Begley Jr., you might know him best from like the Christopher Guest movies. He's in all of those. He plays like Sitwell in Arrested Development. Yes, the guy whose eyebrows are always falling off.
Yes, the rich nemesis. Yeah, he's a guy who's in a million things. He's one of those character actors who's just like, oh, look at that.
If you can't get William H. Macy, Ed Begley Jr. is available.
It's funny. He most of the time plays like a crunchy do-gooder, which in real life he is, like, you know, a very conservationist themed guy. He's seen by the Aaron Sorkins of the world, he's seen as hard left by being like a kind of deep blue liberal.
He's like a rich Hollywood liberal, but he seems to be doing good. He's he's been doing environmentalism since the 70s. So
he is a rich kid too. Like he was born, he's that junior ain't for nothing. His dad was in the industry, you know.
Yes, the junior's there for a reason. He would go on to play Dr. Peter Corso in Batman Beyond.
Yeah, which was another guy who's like a regular guy forced to do something by evil people. So I wonder if that is an intentional casting choice by Andrea.
Right. We love Andrea Romano. Yeah. Charlie suffers three indignities on top of everything he suffered throughout the day, where The ball game isn't playing because there's an escaped madman, right? Who could that be? Read the title card up front. You'll know.
Yeah, that's so great. You're, as a viewer, you're waiting for the Joker. You're like, when's this Joker going to show up? And you're watching this loser talk about it. And yeah, the baseball team in Gotham, the Gotham Knights. That's the name
okay.
of the team.
Fitting, yep. fitting. Mm-hmm. So he's got to pull aside once as all the cops scream past him. Then the Batmobile is bearing down on him. He's got to pull aside again. And then this station wagon with luggage on top of it cuts him off. My question is, did the Joker kill a family to steal this car?
I think that absolutely. Yeah. I think Batman, this shows that Batman also like messed up. Like Batman's going in the wrong direction. Joker's way behind him.
I think upon watching it now, I don't think I noticed last time, but it might be there to signal like the Joker will hurt your family.
Yeah.
He's just done it to get this car. We don't know if they're alive or dead or who had to suffer to get this station wagon that was clearly on the way to some other destination.
Yeah, I absolutely believe Joker murdered a family and is driving around in it. But that's why if it was the Joker wagon, like if it was a purple car, the guy would know it's a Joker and he wouldn't flip him off.
I like that it's just a family car, this unexpected place to find the Joker. So let's hear Charlie finally having it.
Oh, that's it. No signal, no nothing. Just treat me like I don't exist. Sorry, comrade. Not this time. Hey, buddy. Yeah, I'm talking to you, clown. You think you own the whole road? Why, for 2 cents, I'd... That was the Joker. I cussed out the Joker.
I like how we briefly lapse into the action version of the Charlie Collins theme, which it still has like the Oompa music in the background, so you don't take it too seriously. But whatever that farty instrument is perfect for him.
It's typical for a loser. The look of Joker's grinning face at the guy, like when you see him reveal, like, oh, what you get? Like the Joker's grinning face says, I am so excited that I found a victim to victimize. Like, oh boy.
You've given me the chance to respond, sir, and I am in control. And I feel like it was the kid-friendly version of this, but Charlie shaking his fist and then turning into a wave, I feel like Dini really wanted him to have him flip the Joker off and then turn it into a wave.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's like, I cussed out the Joker. You didn't really cuss him out. You called him a clown.
I am certain that they drew middle finger versions of that in the offices.
Yes.
I feel very sure of that. Also just cussed out. I mean, but that way of saying like for 2 cents, like what a perfect setup for a thing the Joker's gonna, and the way the Joker just very relaxedly puts his hand up like he's like signaling, I'm gonna move my car to this lane now, like
Charlie cannot escape the Joker. He's sweating. He jumps over a ton of lanes, careens towards the exit. I love the cool trails and the headlights and taillights they add.
Not digital. They kind of drop that. It's not a there's many car chases after this, and I think in Mask of the Phantasm they do it, but it's pretty rare to see the tracking lights in later episodes.
He's driving along this pitch black street. He thinks he loses the Joker, but then the Joker pulls out right in front of him. I would just T-bone the Joker if I was Charlie. Just
give
gun
it a shot. You know what, if I die we'll both die together. He doesn't want any trouble. Also the great shadow work on both of their faces because they're all lit by just headlights. It's really good.
So Charlie pulls away from the Joker, just blasts through this fence into a park. His car obviously just stalls out on the hill to make his bad day even worse. Another bad thing happened to him today, and he starts racing up this cliff. He runs out of breath, just slumps against the tree, and that's where the Joker finds him.
There's your 2 cents. Now, what are you going to do to me?
Listen, I'm sorry, really. I had a bad day. Boss turned down my raise.
Now look, my rude friend. We can't have people cursing at each other on the freeway. It's simply not polite. I'm just going to have to teach you some manners.
Please don't. I have a family, a wife, a little boy. Please, I'll do anything to make it up. Anything.
Anything, says you. Okie dokie. wallet.
Oh, sure. I don't have much cash.
No, please, don't insult me. Charles Michael Collins. That's you. Lousy picture, though. Lousy. Address, height, weight, blah, blah, blah. Righty. Oh, chuckers.
So that was the first time the TV viewing audience saw this version of the Joker. That was his first appearance. And
yeah.
Different than the Nicholson version. Obviously different than the Romero version as well.
A perfect introduction to him, man. Just he walks in like you... It's calibrating you for like you are terrified of this guy and his this is not a Joker origin story. Like they're not bothering with that. They're just like, you know who the Joker is. You're scared of him. Like he's not the clown prince of crime, like goofball or anything. He's a terrifying guy who talks like just gets right in your face
and just broke out of jail. I love the framing of him because he is lit by his own car's headlights, standing on a hill above Charlie, lit from behind, so when Charlie looks up at him, he's like looking at God.
Yeah,
this thing that is so much more powerful and bigger than him.
And his hat, I love hat Joker, you know. He doesn't always wear his hat, but it's such a great it's almost like it also makes it feel old school. It's like, I put on my driving hat, I'm the Joker.
After watching this again, I'm sick of these sloppy Jokers.
Yeah,
I'm sick of the Leto Joker and the 2019, who's that guy again? Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix Joker,
and even RIP Heath Ledger. Sloppy Jokers all around. Let's get a classy Joker in there again, folks.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.